This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hour number two, coming from the Tiki and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams with their help. They can help you as well. Rocket Mortgage, push button. Get mortgage on this Tuesday around the country. CBS Sports Radio, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM Channel 206 on Twitter. At Tiki and Tierney, 1-855-212-4227. Looking forward to this conversation. Let's set this up properly. So, if you're watching college hoops this year, you're realizing that it's a very unique season in one very obvious regard. The players that will, or most of the players that will be called and heard first at the June draft, the 2020 NBA draft, are not really significant or have any sort of bearing on this season.
Yep.
It's a very unique setup here. And, you know, you look at the NCAA tournament. Here we are about a month or so away from Selection Sunday on CBS. It's going to be great. Brackets will be printed and everybody's going to be fired up. And everybody, I can't wait. I love it. I think that while most people would view this as a negative, I'm here to tell everybody that it's an anomaly, and everybody needs to relax.
Yeah,
because you need to realize that last year, which was special with Zion and Morant from Murray State, Barrett, and you had, you know, just 7-8 kids that were just jumping off the page. You had Culliver, your guy Hunter as well.
Yep.
The year before, you had Trae Young, you had Ayton. Even though they got bounced quickly, they lost. I believe they lost to Buffalo that year. I believe.
I think they lost in the first round.
They definitely lost in the first round. Yeah. Bagley from Duke, a lot of the players that were prominently featured during the season at least made the big dance. This year is very different. I mean, so I'm going to flip this to you, and I've got another direction to go, but I want to weave Tiki in here. Do you believe that this will be to the detriment of the tournament this year because the star power, there's a lack of familiarity?
You know, it's funny because in the break we were just talking about the ACC Network, which is now on ESPN, one of the ESPN channels. And last night I was watching Unbelievable, which is the UVA story.
That's not the Andrew Dice play.
No.
Unbelievable.
No. Exactly. But like part of that story is the players themselves.
By the way, you ever see Dice stand up?
No.
Oh, God. Never did. You got to treat yourself.
This wasn't like my era.
You were in high school.
I know, but it wasn't. But I was like in the South.
You got it. Yeah, that's true. You got to treat yourself to a comedy that you can no longer say.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
they don't do that.
Eddie Murphy doesn't even cuss anymore.
I know.
But anyways, in the doc, they were talking about how, you know, Kyle Guy's up there saying, who was obviously the most outstanding player for Virginia, was like, yeah, everybody said this was going to be the boringest final or whatever it was going to be. But it never is, right? It's college basketball. It's March Madness for a reason. And if you look at last year, BT, last year was also unconventional, right? Virginia is not, I mean, they're, you could say they're in a blue blood, but they're not. You know what I mean?
I kind of look at them as a team that's become a
blue
blood.
Yes, I would agree, but they're not historically. Right? They were there with Ralph Sampson in the 80s. They never made it to the Final Four, right? And now you come 20 years forward or 25 years forward, Tony Bennett makes it feel like this team's always been there. But Virginia was in the dumps for a long time.
They were relevant for a long time.
Listen to the Elite Eight. I mean, there's some teams in there you know and you cherish. Michigan State. And Duke, they played in the East region. But then you go down to the West. There's Texas Tech and Gonzaga.
What a story,
right?
Texas Tech and Gonzaga, right?
That was in the West. Those aren't blue bloods. In the Midwest, it was Auburn against Kentucky, an SEC matchup. Auburn obviously won that one, and then Virginia and Purdue. Mm-hmm. And so, of the eight teams, there's like three of them that are you expect to be there. The other five are kind of new entrants into the pool, and a lot of it's because they have veteran teams. Virginia had a very veteran team last year. Mm-hmm. Purdue was the same way. Texas Tech was also the same. Actually, Culver was young, but it's because they had experienced teams. And so I think contrary to what you're about to say, I think we're seeing a flip of the trend of the Blue Bloods can make it even if they have inferior teams, right? Because of coaching and because they're superstar talent or who are going to be, I don't know, lottery picks, right? I think you're starting to see teams like Dayton or like
who has a top five draft pick
or like Baylor who have upperclassmen. They can compete in college basketball into the NCAA tournament and get deep. It used to be like, yeah, they're going to get knocked out in the you know, the round of 32 or the Sweet 16. Now they have a chance. So I think it's shifting because the one and done phenomenon has kicked out the best players in some ways.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I do think what's unique about this year is that the players that will get called early on draft night will not be there. We're not going to watch them.
That's right.
I mean, two kids are in Australia. I think for the average fan, it's going to be a problem. I think for the average fan.
For the late fan, yeah. For the one who just parachutes in and says, I want to see the people who I'm supposed to be loving, right?
Or at least I mean, like, you know, because think about this. Even if you're just a big NBA fan and a fringe college fan, and I do think there are fans like that.
Yep.
I think that, think about being a fan now in 2020 is that you're almost like a pseudo GM. Like, you really have an investment in the ability to design trades and see if the trade tracker actually works, if you in the NBA with money, or you can construct your own mock drafts. I mean, think about everybody thinks that they know what's going to happen in the NFL draft because they're armed with information they never had before.
Yeah.
So that's stimulating to the average fan. I don't need star players. Listen, I love when there's a Zion, all right? And that game with Central Florida last year was phenomenal.
That was great.
That was crazy. It was crazy. Yeah, I love to see stories like that because now I know you've got a blue blood with a legitimate superstar that is now, he's helping carry the NCAA tournament while simultaneously showing a real path to the NBA. But my favorite stories are, the Butlers, the George Masons, even Richmond in 1990, whatever the heck it was, when they 12 seed out or whatever they were, they beat Syracuse. I mean, these things weren't supposed to happen, certainly back then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even Danny Manning and the Miracles. Now, Danny Manning was the first. Danny was first overall pick in the late 80s. That team won the championship. So, of course, everybody knows Danny Manning. He's also coaching. But the other players outside of Rick Barry's son on that team, do you really know anybody from that team? Probably not.
But does it matter?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't think that name recognition in college basketball is as important.
As it used to be.
Now, here's what it's important to.
It used to be. It used to be huge, right?
Well, because they'd be around for 3 years, and you'd have minimally, and you would have rivalries that would really mean something.
Like, wow, Danny Ferry's back here again, or Christian Laettner's back here again, or like these guys are back here again. Like,
exactly.
Now it's just like, okay, that kid was great, Zion Williamson. They got knocked out. What'd they get knocked out at?
Was it the eight?
Elite. They got knocked out at the Elite. I just said that to Michigan State. But it's like, okay, but he's not, we're not going to see him again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And now if you go look at Duke's roster, maybe you know two names on that roster.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So it's different. It's just different. Like, because of the name recognition used to be very important, right, to viewership. I don't think it's as important anymore as stories start to become the more important part of the NCAA tournament. So, like, those Cinderella teams that used to, get to the Sweet 16 or whatever and then get knocked out because it was inferior, they're not going to get knocked out anymore because they're veteran, right?
Correct.
And so,
it's a great equalizer. Right? That and the three-point shot.
It's a great equal. That's exactly right. And the three-point shot, all you need is one or two guys that can knock them down when it matters, and you can win.
Well, look at Loyola. I mean, nobody's in the NBA.
That's right.
But they've got kids who know how to play that have been together for a couple of years, And the difference, too, and because you had both when we were growing up, you had stars and you had rivalries.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've said this a few times. There truly was a point where St. John's Georgetown felt like it was an NBA game on CBS at noon on Saturday.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the disdain that we had for Georgetown and that they had for us was palpable and no different than I'm sure, Georgia Tech fans had for Duke. And I know they still have it to an extent, but when Mark Price is there for, did Mark even play for 4 or 3? He may have stayed for all 4. Either way, he was there for at least 3.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody like that is there for almost a half a decade and he's played against the same point guard for almost half a decade, I mean, That sells itself. You don't need to spruce anything up. There's name recognition, there's familiarity with the rivalry, and there's Bobby Kremins and Coach K. And that's going to sustain itself. This is a little different, but I don't think it's a bad different.
Yeah.
I think, listen, would I prefer that there were three, four, five names that are going to be called in the top 10 on draft night? Yeah, I do. But that's not going to happen this year. But I think it's an anomaly.
Yeah.
You'll get that next year.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you never know when, you know, one of those, you know, these programs that you just don't expect steal the story of the tournament.
Like VCU.
That's exactly.
Like Butler twice.
There's so many of them.
Or George Mason in 06.
And that has the chance of happening this season because it's a bunch of teams that are veteran that are sitting atop the, you know, San Diego State hasn't lost.
No.
Think about that. San Diego State hasn't lost, and nobody talks about it.
And they've been good for a
nationally.
While. They've been good for a while.
Of course.
You know, it's not like they just burst on the scene. They've been winning for a while.
And that in and of itself is a great story.
Mm-hmm.
Or the fact that Baylor lost the second game of the season, and then they haven't lost since
That's right.
then.
And That's
so
right.
those are the stories that become more important than the individual players that we used to have to have in order to be entertained.
Listen, here's what it's for. It's for people who are lazy. Honestly, it's for people who are lazy, who don't take, and I don't begrudge you, it just means you're not a college basketball fan. For those of you who don't sit down and actually watch a game, I'm sorry, but we can't get a big spoon and force and feed you. If you don't know the players, that's on you, not on us. I guarantee there'll be buzzer beaters. I guarantee there'll be upsets.
Because there always is.
And I will say this about Selection Sunday this year. I mean, yeah, Kansas will be prominently featured. We'll see what Duke does in the ACC tournament. And, you know, obviously the other teams, the Dayton, San Diego States, they can't afford getting bumped off in their conference tournament because the metrics are a little weaker. They could drop more significantly than a team from, you know, like a Michigan State or something like that. But Selection Sunday this year, I have no idea what's going to happen. Like, I'm going to legitimately sit there with intrigue and – I mean, our mouths will be open with one seeds and two seeds. I think it's going to be maybe, you know, I mean, prisoner of the moment, perhaps, but maybe among the most exciting Selection Sundays of all time.
Yeah.
Certainly the most unique.
It's going to feel very random. Teams that you just expect to be somewhere are not going to be where we think they're going to be.
Yeah, Dayton's supposed to be in a 9 seed, playing in the 8-9 matchup. What are you doing weaseling your way into the top? What, are you going to be the top seed on the 2 line?
That's right.
I mean, at this rate, you might.
Might.
Is San Diego State going to be the third number 1 seed? Maybe. I mean, to me, that's fun.
I mean, they have to. If they finish their regular season undefeated, they have to be, right?
Oh, if they don't lose a game, they're going to be a 1 seed for sure. So it's there for you, you know, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. Although Tiki's Cavs are...
Hey, we're getting back. That's all
you guys going to the NIT or the NCAA?
No, we're going to the NCAA.
You
going to
make it back?
Of course. We're not positioned poorly. We were for a while. We lost 3 games in a row.
You were telling me about the kid from Italy who...
Who
saved him a little bit.
Well, he's just been knocking down 3-pointers. It saved us.
We just won a game, right?
Yeah, against North Carolina. Big one coming up against, and I hate to say this, but it is. The big one against Boston College this weekend. Or actually, it might be tomorrow. I can't remember. When is that?
BC's had a few good wins. You better watch out for
they
BC.
They just beat NC State.
BC's no joke.
You're right.
I'm not saying they're power.
No, they're like 500.
And their coach better get there. I think he's going to get fired. But they've won. Remember, didn't they beat Duke? At this point, Duke was a power. Didn't they beat, not that they're not a power now, but they beat Duke.
Now I got to look.
3 years ago in Chestnut Hill? 2 years ago? Now, BC's had a couple of pretty good wins. All right, T, coming up next here. So, Rob Manfred obviously dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Dropped the ball. Horrendous, right? But some are now saying that this was maybe not avoidable in terms of the punishment he doled out based on something that was pre-existing. Tiki and I'll get to that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here on Tiki and Tierney is 1-855-212-4227. Sponsored by GEICO, whether you own or rent, GEICO makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work. Get a quote, geico.com. All right, so let's get back to the scandal that has rocked the sporting world, the Astros here, which is amazing. And butchered beyond belief by the commissioner. You know, now there's, and this has surfaced here, and you know, there's a CBA and some memos that have that have popped up that basically state that the commissioner was not able to, or that it was implemented within these policies, that punishment for this kind of cheating, the players would be absolved, if you will, and it would go to the higher-ups as it did. First of all, Rob Manfred's got different types of power where he can intervene and he can bypass and circumvent those. That's number one. My greatest I'm going to actually forget, put Manfred aside for a moment, although I do want to circle back to that and definitely get your thought. You know what's bothering me, though? And it really hit me yesterday, and I didn't even get into it yesterday, but now, and I need to get into this a little bit here. Why in the world are some of baseball's luminaries not weighing in? I mean, the guys who used to play the game.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the old heads?
Yeah, and I don't even mean Henry Aaron or Willie Mays, who are well into their 80s. I mean, you know, where's Steve Carlton? Where's Mike Schmidt?
Yeah.
You know, Pete Rose weighed in because we had Pete Rose on the show, but Pete Rose will weigh in on anything to, you know, to improve his candidacy. A great spot, a great interview, but still. I mean, where's Randy Johnson? Where's some of the guys who somewhat recently retired?
Yeah.
Why is nobody weighing in on this?
It's interesting. I don't know why they're not weighing in on it. They should, obviously, because it's affecting their game. Maybe because they view trying to gain an advantage like this a little bit differently. But I think once you start digging into the like the sophistication of this scheme, it just gets uglier and uglier. And as evidenced by the current players who are continually attacking Rob Manfred. And back to your point about these memos, these memos that were sent to players, basically saying if this type of electronic sign stealing continues, you guys will be absolved, and like front office folks and general managers and your manager are going to be the ones that are penalized.
So then why were they granted immunity? From what?
I have no idea.
If you can't get punished, you don't need immunity.
But my point is...
Think about that, though, for a second.
Exactly.
I mean, if you can't get punished, you don't need immunity.
But doesn't that also, like, tactically say, it's okay to go and cheat and do whatever. You're going to be fine.
Certainly leaving the door a little open.
Nothing's going to happen to you. And so...
Yeah, imagine if we got a CBS memo. Hey, listen, you know, you guys can curse on the air all you want. You won't get punished.
Yeah,
but hey,
exactly.
You know, Mark Chernoff and, you know, the up and Dave, they'll get hammered.
That's right. And get fined and everything else. You guys will be all right. You're good, man.
Yeah, right?
just make sure you tell us when you do it so we can find those other guys. It's just weird.
Like very weird.
Like the chain of command or the... Not the chain of command, but like the I don't know, who gets punished for the wrongdoing doesn't make any sense. It's not commensurate with what's actually happening. And, like, the other side of this that I guess is also frustrating is Rob Manfred, as the leader of Major League Baseball, his job is to prevent this type of stuff from happening. So, yeah, I know there's a memo. Yeah, I know the MLBPA is likely to challenge you.
Tough.
Make them challenge you.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Make it so that the PA comes down extraordinarily hard on you. But let's not forget that the PA also has members who are as pissed off at the Astros as anybody, right? I mean, in fact, those other PA members are probably more upset than media and fans are at the Astros players and Rob Manfred. So, I mean, no matter how he wants to, like spin this, and I said this yesterday, he's just spinning this. He's like a spinster over here. No matter how you want to spin this, right, it comes out looking bad for the commissioner, because I know you might not have been able to legally because you thought you were going to get overturned by the PA. Do it anyways, because it's the right thing to do.
And I believe that he could do it. And we're going to talk to Billy Ripken coming up next segment. I can't wait for the conversation. That'll be a lot. I mean, an old school player, great on TV. Love what they do on the MLB Network. So we'll have Billy coming up next here, and I'm sure he's going to be ripping with opinions. Even if he didn't have the ability to circumvent the ruling, okay, by doing what you said, even if it's kind of a contrived PR stunt, you're serving the greater good.
I think you're absolutely right.
You're placating fans who wanted a pound of flesh and got nothing.
Yep.
And I understand that.
Fans and other players.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, from the players' union, from their point of view, you know, their job is to protect the players. But when 99% of the players are pissed off and 1% got away with cheating, you've got to go to the greater good at that point. So I don't know if they would acquiesce and say, okay, yes, we will allow this to go through without challenging. I don't know how they would handle it, but it almost doesn't matter, because the blowback that Rob Manfred's getting now, and by extension, the blowback that baseball's getting, would have been really thought out if at least the perception was out there that, damn it, at least we know our commissioner tried to crush them.
Yeah.
Did nothing.
Yeah. And that's so, and that's what you're starting to hear.
And that's why people are still talking about it.
That's right.
That's why Turner from the Dodgers goes at Manfred.
Yep.
Just completely eviscerated him.
It's somebody
and
different.
On point.
It's somebody different every day. as somebody every day says something about Rob Manfred.
Yeah.
And how bad of a job he's done handling this. And they're not wrong because he didn't. It's like he didn't even try. It's almost like he picked four guys, the GM, the head coach, two players who were not even playing really when this kind of went down as the guys to be the fall guys. And we'd just forget about it. Or the other players would forget about this. You did a good job. You did a terrible job.
No, this is long established that the job was horrendous. My takeaway.
But I just hate the excuses.
Yeah, this riles you up. It just riles you up.
Don't make an excuse for doing something wrong, right? Fix it. They had immunity. I couldn't punish them, right? We got to punish the executives. We can't punish the players because the players' union will get upset. Who cares if the players' union is going to get upset?
Uh-huh.
The players' union is half made up of players who are also upset.
More than half.
Well, 99%. Exactly. Are also upset.
You know, and again, I don't need to hear Hank Aaron speak out. Hank said a little something here, but how about the younger guys? You know, I mean, Nolan Ryan's not going to say anything because Nolan Ryan was with the Astros, you know, for years. You know, but again, you know, just, I don't know. I mean, I'd love to see Randy Johnson. I love Greg Maddux. I love John Smoltz in the broadcast booth.
Well, and that's the only ones you're seeing talk out, the guys who are paid to have an opinion about this. Like the guys on the MLB Network, they're expressing it because it's their job. Right?
The others who are silent, like somebody like Reggie Jackson, it doesn't really behoove Reggie to say anything because he's got a relationship with the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And who knows if the Yankees were doing anything.
Yeah.
It hasn't been proven, but, you know, to me, you know, once I was fooled somewhat with the scandal, how deeply rooted the scandal was with steroids in baseball, I don't believe anything anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't believe that the Astros were alone, but they're the only ones who got pinched to this degree. And something I said yesterday, it bears repeating, the biggest injustice to this baseball season, you know, Rob Manfred, I know that he's still collecting information and doing his due diligence, but you know what? By not penalizing the Red Sox now, It's almost March 1st. We're going to start playing, you know, grapefruit games pretty soon. They're coming, Cactus League games. Before you know it, it's opening day. Every team starts in March this year.
Yeah.
So if you drop the penalty on the Red Sox a week before opening day, it takes away from opening day is going to be littered with this no matter what.
Right.
But if you drop it in the middle of the season, just as it dissipates, boom, it flares back up like a big baseball bomb. He's butchered this from every direction.
It's mind-bending
how bad he's been.
It really is. What was the prop bet that you guys were talking about?
Oh, what was the number? There's a prop bet. Somebody sent this to me, to be fair.
83.5.
Astros
hit by pitches. Now, the average of MLB last year was 66.
I got it. Santa did some digging. Here it is. So, there's a prop bet.
They got hit 66 times. Astros.
The over-under's been set 83.5 for the Astros to get hit by a pitch this season.
Yeah.
And then
last year they got hit
66 times a year ago,
yep.
61 in 2018. Four teams were over the 83.5 threshold that they established for the over for the Astros this year.
Including the number one team, which was
the Mets. Were almost 195. So there you go. So bet the house on the Astros getting popped more than 83.5 times.
There's no doubt about that.
Oh, there's no doubt. All right, coming up, Billy Ripken from the MLB Network. He's an analyst. He's very salient thoughts, not afraid to let it rip. We'll get those, and we'll throw by these new conversations, the new aspect to, you know, being limited to his ability to really punish and penalize the Astros with real venom. It was soft. Everybody knows it, so we'll get Billy's opinions coming up after Axe Update, which is right now. Here's Rich Axe. Tuesday night at 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific, sixth-rated Dayton. Heads to VCU, Battle of the Rams in an A-10 showdown, and it's only on CBS Sports Network. Tiki and Tierney here, CBS. What the hell? What are you doing to me over here? Oh, God. Clown show in the studio sometimes, I'll tell you. Tiki comes in, he was eating something. He had a little something on his chin.
I was making sure it was gone. I'm
being the good partner that I am, as I was getting ready to, that's why I stumbled on the read, because I'm looking at this guy's chin. I go, Tiki, you got something on your chin. Then as I'm reading it, he's going like this. I'm like, now do I have something on my chin? What are you doing?
I'm just making sure it's all gone.
And it is gone. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. All right, we have a lot of things to discuss with our next guest who does a great job on MLB Network. Love him. Great opinions. They have a lot of fun. His name is Billy Ripken. Of course, he played the game, Brothers with Cal. And he's got a new book out as well, and it attacks a very interesting aspect of the game, the new age, you know, metrics and infusion of numbers versus the gut. That's the short summation. The name of the book is called State of Play, and we'll talk about that and everything around the mess that Manfred's created. What? Billy Ripken is with us here on the show. Billy, what's going on, man? How are you today?
What's going on, guys? How are we?
Doing great. First of all, great concept for the book. You are, to me, and I watch you guys all the time, but for those who don't, I would think most people would view you as somebody who's in a unique space. You talk baseball every night, mm-hmm. so you know that the numbers are obviously pertinent, and they have a real place in the game, but... You know, your dad, yourself, Cal, I mean, you're an old school baseball guy, so the gut's still a big part of it. So this book kind of balances that, correct?
Well, I think first and foremost why I put the book out there, because the last few years there's been so much conversation on the new school and using the so-called phrase analytics. And I just wanted to point out that first and foremost, old school guys have always used numbers and we've always used information to better ourselves. And I think when you talk about that, that's kind of what analytics are. You're using the information at hand. The added little flavor that the old school guy brings to the table is he can actually use those numbers, blend them with actual experience that they've had in the game, and tell you what numbers are going to work and what numbers are not. And I just think that we've lost sight over these past few years that I just got this feeling that they just thought that old school people were just some big dummies that threw the bats and balls out on the field and said, go get them. But we like numbers. In fact, when you go through the book, I'm using an awful lot of numbers, but yep. I still certainly consider myself very old school.
Well, what I always found interesting, and I remember Joe Torre going through this with David Cohn in the World Series back in 96 against the Braves, and trust me, not the only skipper to do this, when you come out, and you look them in the eyes, and you know what the radar's kind of reading. You mm-hmm. lost two or three ticks, and that ball's not biting the way it was the first few frames. But you still kind of trust the guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, specifically, where do you stand on the concept of third time through the order, which is proven based on the numbers that obviously the ERA and the whips go right through the roof compared to the first two at-bats, versus trusting a guy and seeing and reacting to what your eyes are telling you from the managerial seat, whether or not he still has something?
Yeah, and that's a big one. And that's one where you do kind of wrestle with it a little bit. Well, I can say it this way. So let's say a guy has had a little bit of a history of struggling with his third time through. If an old school manager goes out there and hooks him and the bullpen gives it up, the old school guy is going to wrestle with it because he knows that the most important piece of information he just ignored, which was how things were going right then and there.
Yeah.
If a new school guy hooks him and the bullpen gives it up, he might even say, well, I did the right thing because the numbers said so. So I think information there, and that's a nice little tricky spot. But information is always going to be good. But there's also that current, in-your-face, right staring right at you information that can't be ignored. And if you just look at a spreadsheet, you will ignore that.
It's good stuff. 12 years in the show. Talking to Billy Ripken, analyst, MLB Network. He's got a new book out, which we started to discuss. It's called State of Play, and Billy's with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
Now, Billy, as you are well aware, the conversation that's engulfing baseball right now is about Rob Manfred's lack of disciplining of the Astros players and current players. Their peers are speaking out, media speaking out, fans are speaking out. And we know that Rob probably missed the boat here. This probably should be taken away, but you know what I mean. He missed the boat here. But he's making excuses. I was handcuffed. We knew that the PA would come after us if we disciplined the players. If you were commissioner, I'm putting it in your hands now, would you have at least tried to discipline them and let the PA come after you? So at least the perception is you tried to do the right thing?
You know, I think the only thing that he could have done differently is maybe address the PA earlier and maybe went to them and say, look, during the start of this investigation, if I come up with something, what do you think is going to happen? Maybe that's what it was. But I think that his directive that he sent out, though, earlier in 2017, basically addressed almost that. And that was in 2017. He said, if I feel that teams are doing this and we come to an investigation and we find out teams are doing it using electronics, doing this real-time stuff, the manager and the general manager are going to wear this. So his directive in 2017 said the manager and the general manager are going to wear this. Now, I hear some of the players out there talking and everything else, and you're talking about now where don't run that divide within the union. That's my kind of thought. You know, first and foremost, I get people's, upset a little bit with it. But I go back to 2017, his directive said this is going to happen. So he kind of said what he was going to do. and then did it. And look, I agree that I think he should be applauded when it comes to the year in the year for the manager and the general manager. And we got one more investigation going on right now with the Red Sox.
Yeah.
So let's see where this one kind of goes. But I'm pretty sure if I was a manager right now, and this is my first gig in the big leagues, I'm going to have that meeting in spring training with everybody and say, look, players, money's good. You guys are all getting paid. Congratulations. I'm happy for every one of you. But if I see any of you cheating, I'm going to turn you in because you're not going to mess me over.
Yeah, well, that's
this is where this is the way we're going to move forward. So I think we're going to be in a good spot sooner or later. And, you know, when the initial things come out, everybody's going to be upset about something. So let's see what happens after the Red Sox and see what happens once we get through spring training.
Yeah, no, because that's the fate that befell, obviously, A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow, if you really think about it. But let me back up for a second. So are you okay with how this was handled simply because the commissioner 3 years ago said, players, you guys got, you know, a free pass. It's going to be on your skips, who obviously are going to get a year suspension and ultimately fired by their organization. Are you okay with that?
Not being on the inside of it where I said I am, and here's why. Where is the doing? This would have been a long gone, drawn out process of, okay, you banged the trash can 22 times, you got the trash can banged 8, you got this, you got that. I just don't see where that end game was going to result, and I think that he had a clear avenue to find an end game in this one, and we've already hit on this, without dragging the Players Association in. So if it would have been 3 months prior to the investigation, if he'd have went to Tony Clark and the boys and said, look, if I find some stuff, this might get ugly. We also have a CBA right around the corner. We got one more year for the next CBA. So I think there was a way to find an end game, levy a punishment, kind of deter this moving forward, hopefully, and not have a lawsuit on his hand with the Players Association.
I still think it's soft, Billy. I got to be honest with you here. I know what you're saying. You're trying to serve a couple of different men, not you, but I mean, but baseball, a few different masters. The CBA's coming up. You had this written a couple of years ago. You don't want to fracture the players' union. I understand all that. But to me, the deterrent is not direct enough to dissuade players from doing it again. I get your example about if I'm the manager, I sit down in spring training. These guys are making $30 million a year, so you think they care about a manager? Especially the managers now who are just an extension, like a puppet for the front office who are making no money. They don't respect that guy. They're not going to let that stop them if they still want to digitally cheat. So Rob Manfred didn't drop down the hammer to say to the players, do not do this again, because if you do, here's what's coming. He kicked it down the road. It's soft, Billy.
All right, I love everything that you said. I think I was giggling a little bit in there because we are going to disagree a little bit on this one. And the beautiful thing about you, you're a New Yorker, dude. Of course it was soft.
Yeah, but Dodger fans are saying that too. Let me ask you something differently. Talking to Billy Ripien. Anytime there's a big issue, certainly steroids at the forefront, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, you know, we look to the men who really built this game to really comment on this. But where are the voices now? Like, where are the guys from the 70s? Where's Johnny Bench? Where's Steve Carlton? Where's Mike Schmidt? Where's Jim Palmer? Where are these? No, nobody said a word. Why not?
Well, maybe that's a good question. Maybe because all the current players seem to like the microphones and the social media so much in front of them that nobody has to pick up the phone and call those guys.
Yeah, true. But do you blame them? But, Billy, do you?
You know what? Here's something, though. You did say the Dodgers were upset about it, the fans, because the Dodgers are calling for some suspension. Well, the Red Sox are still under investigation for 2018. They just traded for two Red Sox that won the 2018 World Series.
That's
so
true.
I wonder what happens when the Red Sox penalty is going to be handed down. If those guys won, Mookie Betts maybe suspended if they found out he was involved in doing something with Boston.
Yeah, but apparently the Red Sox are at a far less, you know, sophisticated level. But do you understand the gripe of the current players?
Sure. I mean, I can look. I swung and missed a lot of sliders in the dirt. and I swung and missed because a slider looks like a fastball out of the guy's hand. Mm-hmm. So if I were anybody, I would be the pitcher that was chapped because – you know, in playing sports, we have this total recall of what happened in every situation
we've
ever encountered. And there's guys that are sitting there in their spring training condos out in Arizona and Florida, and they're going, man, I threw that dude a nasty slider, one ball, two strikes, and he spit on it. Didn't
yes.
even offer at it. So it's not the pitches that they knew were coming that got hit. it's probably worse that the pitches they knew were coming they didn't swing at because they were balls, got another pitch and hit them, that these pitchers are probably sitting there fuming. So I get it, because when we compete, there is a little bit of an ego, cockiness, attitude, whatever it may be, that gets into the mix of this. And if you felt like you were jobbed like that, like the one-on-one scenario, that's why I think there might be some pitchers that decide to maybe put one in somebody's backside from time to time during the course of the next season. And I wouldn't necessarily bat an eye at that one.
And that's what I was going to ask you. You lead me right there. And the pitchers, they hold the baseball. They're 60 feet, 6 inches away. They want to hit somebody. They're going to hit them. Hopefully they keep it below the neck and you hit them in the proper spot. But I don't think the base paths are immune to some below board stuff either. I know it's different. You can't take out, you're breaking up the double play, and obviously collisions at home, it's been kind of taken out of the game. I understand that. But I don't know if Jose Altuve hangs in there an extra second and he's playing against the Dodgers, or a team that really feels slighted, or just a professional who feels slighted from a professional courtesy point of view. He's going to get railroaded. I mean, they have to know that this is coming, and quite frankly, I hope it does. I hope it does.
Well, the funny thing is that, Dusty's out there taking the lead like Dusty should, protecting his players, and I hope nothing happens. But I even sit back and think about, man, when Dusty played, he played hard. And I think if Dusty thought he was wrong, he might try to do something like that as well. But the interesting scenario will be, let's say a pitcher hits somebody in the backside with a good 94-mile-an-hour fastball right in the left cheek. Umpire probably will get all frisky, throw him out of the game. The league, in turn, therefore, is going to knock that dude out of the game for about 3 days with a suspension. That's when we might get into a little bit of an iffy situation, that if there's a suspension handed down towards a pitcher because they decided to just say, I'm not real happy with you, then it'll be a little bit of an iffy situation.
That's Billy Ripken, 12 years in the show, and he's got a new book out. It's called Stay to Play, and it's basically the new school statistics and analytics versus old school experience and wisdom. Billy, MLB Network, he's with us here on Tiki and Tierney.
Billy, when, if ever, this season, do you think this calms down?
Well, time always has a way of healing things, and I think if you get through the first couple months of season, I think things will calm down. I'm interested to see what happens with this Red Sox investigation. I heard that it was supposed to be some sort of announcement toward the end of the week, but you never know. There could be another lead or something up that will delay on that. But it's definitely a situation where, when we talk about old school, new school, having a camera out there and locking in and doing real-time signs and banging on a trash can, I don't think it belongs to either school, new or old.
Yep.
Even though, obviously, they're using technology in a certain way, there's some form of old school in there if you're beating on a trash can for your signaling device. So I'm not so sure how that that's going to be looked at over time. But I do think that when you're the manager and the general manager, there's going to be a clear thing. And I understand what you're talking about, the guy's making a lot of glue in the clubhouse. And he goes, no, I'm going to do this anyway.
Yeah,
I think that's what just happened in the Houston scenario. But I think there's a way, if you address this and you're firm enough and you're willing to throw a player directly under the bus, meaning the management of the squad, manager or general manager, are singling out players in the future and say, no, I know what you're doing, and I'm going to tell somebody you're doing it, then that might have the ability to stop. I think that the only ones that are going to be able to do that are the guys in the dugout.
Yeah.
Billy, great stuff. We're up against it. Best of luck with the book. It's called Stay to Play. Looking forward to diving in a little bit, and we'll be watching you on the tube, MLB Network. Great job, man.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Billy. Okay.
Billy Network. Billy Ripken. He's an old school guy. A little
MLB
surprised.
Network.
A little, I do. I love the MLB. I want to take batting practice in the field. I do.
It's tiny, man. You're rocking about it.
That's what I want to do. I'm going to pick a real masher.
Where were we at where they had the mini baseball field?
That was the Final Four. God,
oh, that's right. Probably. It was a wiffle ball field. It was awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was denting them. I mean, I was putting that wiffle ball well over 200 feet, which is not easy to hit a wiffle ball.
That was a great setup, but the fans couldn't get there. Remember? Because
it was always
empty.
Good, because then I would have had to share the batter's box, which I didn't want to do. Joe Burrow says he has leverage. Does he? That's next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.